Today is January 24th. We're learning Masechet Baba Kama, chapter 3. We're going to do Mishnayot 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
Last week we did 4, and I wanted to do 5, but we didn't do 5 because there were only 2 people here.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it off. So we'll review a little bit of 4 that we did last time, and we'll do Mishnah 5, and perhaps we'll even get to Mishnah 6. So without further ado, let's read the 4th Mishnah of chapter 3. Shnei kaderim shahayu mahalchin ze ahar ze. 2 potters that were walking this after this. They're walking more or less in a straight line, single file.
Yeah, ze
yes. V'nitkal harishon v'nafal, and tripped the first and fell. V'nitkal hasheni v'harishon, and tripped the second over the first. Harishon chayav b'nizkei hasheni. The first is culpable or obligated in the damage of the second. So the guy who tripped first, he is responsible for the damage he caused to the second. And we could immediately ask ourselves, why? Why should the first guy who tripped be responsible for the damage to the second guy who tripped over him?
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas why? Not from a halachic point of view, from a logical human point of view.
Well, he should have been careful about where he was walking.
Right.
Okay, that's possible number one.
So should the second.
Absolutely.
The first one tripped over his own feet.
Yeah.
So he should have looked where he was going.
Careful.
The second one tripped over.
The second one could have been tailgating.
Tailgating,
okay.
That's right.
Right, so we have to talk about that, absolutely. But first, let's ask why the halakha is as it is. So the first suggestion of Mary Beth is because the first one's responsible for tripping. That's one possibility.
Right.
But we can look at it differently. Let's say he's not responsible for tripping. Is there another way of understanding why the first one might be responsible?
He didn't get out of the way fast enough.
Right. It could be that you're not responsible for tripping. It's a normal thing that sometimes people trip over their own 2 feet.
Uh-huh.
It's happened to all of us.
Right.
Uh-huh. Right?
But you've now become an obstacle and you need to remove yourself from the path.
And that could be it. That this halakha is in a case in which the first one had time to get up and didn't get up. But if there was no time to get up, the second one immediately tripped over the first, and perhaps the halakha would be different.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through my questions pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
According to a little reading, not so quick, I can't read that fast. According to a literal reading of this Mishnah, what is it that caused the second one to fall?
Yeah, the first one.
The first one was in his way and he tripped on him.
Right. In other words, a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Not a pot.
Right.
No.
Right.
Okay. What 2 possibilities might there be for understanding which Avnisikin is involved in this Mishnah?
Well, one could be Adam.
One could be Adam, and the other could be Boar.
Boar.
Right? So, let's think about it. What do you think? Which makes more sense? Is it a boar, or is it Adam Hamazik? What can we argue in this direction or that direction? Poor Jeremy.
Well,
I'm very tired. Lots to do in life.
Okay, so what could we think about this?
Adam would always be...
That's right, he's always responsible.
And Adam is always responsible for any damage
that he causes.
That he causes.
Yeah.
Whereas a boar is passive.
Mm-hmm.
Which he is if he fell.
Okay, so that's
right.
The
so
thing
if he's
exactly,
on the
right?
Ground, he could be, he could perhaps not be able to get up, so he could be passive.
Or
okay.
if he fell and he didn't have time to get up.
Okay, so
right.
Let's just put this in like technical language, mm-hmm. There's such a thing as an avnezikin called Adam Hamazik, a human being who damages.
Mm-hmm.
This person is a person, right? He's a human being. So why wouldn't we classify him as Adam Hamazik? So the answer we just heard is, we might, but we might not because he's not active, he's passive.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's mm-hmm. probably what's going on. There really is a machloket among the commentators. Is this Adam Hamazik or is this boar? And as I mentioned last time, there is a nafkamina. There is a halachic ramification of that, because Adam is not only always responsible, but he's always responsible for everything that he damages. Whereas a boar, even when a boar is responsible, it's responsible for damage done to person, but not to kelim.
Right, so if this, oh, if the so second was pot. Carrying something and it broke,
yeah.
Then the question is, if we have a boar, if this is a boar, then there's no remedy for the broken pot he was carrying. But yeah. if it's a dam, then there is remedy.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then we have to ask ourselves, in the last four words of the Mishnah, when it says, Harishon Hayav Benizkei Hasheni, the first is responsible for the damages to the second, does it only refer to damages to the second's person, or also to the second's pots?
Well, that would depend on how you're understanding this. Is a dam or boar?
Yes, you're right, absolutely. But textually, is there any hint? It's referring only to damage to person, also to damage to vessels, and the answer to that question might be in the second word of the Mishnah.
Well, you can assume he's carrying...
Carrying...
Right, potters. Why doesn't it say people? Why does it say potters?
It must be carrying pots.
Because he's carrying pottery. Is that important for the Mishnah? Well, if it's not important, why did it say it? So it's probably important. If it's important, then it probably means that the pots fell and broke. And then when it says at the end, Chayab and Yizkei Hasheni, it probably refers to the situation under discussion, which is not just the man, but the pots.
Okay. Right.
So there's reason to think that the first guy has to pay for the second guy's pots, and if so, the first guy's probably Adama Mazik and not Boar. Because Boar wouldn't be responsible for pots. On the other hand, the first three Mishnayot of this chapter all talked about damage to person and not to vessels.
Mm-hmm.
So if we say that four is talking about damage to vessels, we would be saying that number four is changing the subject, which is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes all the more possible when we read the Mishnah 5, which goes on indeed to talk about damage to vessels and not just to persons. So it might be that four and five are already the beginning of a new sub-subject. Let's see if there's anything else I want to ask. Let's look at questions 6, 7, and 8. When I ask in 6, what is the significance of the fact they were walking ze'ahar ze'? Well, if they're walking ze'ahar ze', this one in front of that one in single file, it means that in contrast to a situation where they're walking this one towards this one, they don't see. The first guy certainly doesn't see that there's someone who might trip over him.
Right.
So then I ask myself, okay, so why did the Mishnah set itself in the scenario that they're not walking this towards this one, but this one behind this one? What would the law be if they're walking this one towards this one? Would the law be different? Would the law be the same?
Or if they were going to pass and the guy fell,
well,
such a way to trip this to the other one. Yeah.
So think about that. Would the law be the same or different if they were walking at each other? And then one guy fell and the other fell over him.
One guy fell and the other person tripped over him.
Well, they'd have to be awfully close, relatively close, for one to fall over the other. And not have seen that the first fell and move off to the side.
Why would they be walking toward each other?
I mean, it's Rashut Rabim. Some people walking this direction. Some people walking that
walking,
direction.
So they're walking. They're kind of passing.
Yeah. And then one guy trips.
One guy falls.
Trips, and the other guy finds this obstacle in his path and trips over it. What I'm trying to say is,
why
that if the halakha says that the first one who tripped is responsible,
mm-hmm.
I would think he's all the more so responsible in a case when she saw someone else coming at him.
Yeah, you could say.
So this says, even if you tripped and did not see someone coming at you because they're coming from behind, you're still responsible. Say all the more so, I would say you're responsible if you saw him coming and didn't do something to get out of the way or warn him,
mm-hmm.
and he tripped over you. So what I'm trying to say is that it's probably giving us this case to say, even in this case, the first is chayav all the more so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
In a case of them coming at each other.
Okay.
That's what could be. Makes some sense. Mm-hmm. And that's Mishnah 4. To make a short Mishnah short. And now we come to long Mishnah. Mishnah 5. Mm-hmm. The fifth Mishnah of the third chapter of Bava Kamma. So here we go. This is a Mishnah that looks really complicated, and it's really simple, but it looks really complicated.
It sounds like a Three Stooges routine.
Yeah. Except there's only two Stooges.
That's right, there's only two of them. Yeah.
So here we go. And we might need the board for this. Do we have any markers for the board? Let's see.
There's some behind you.
There's some over there. I have my help.
No. Is it, or is that glue sticks?
They're glue sticks.
Oh.
That's okay, but I do have something here. Okay. So, let's read it.
You're going to explain it.
So again, it's simple, okay. But it looks complicated. Zeba vechavito, vezeba bekorato. This one comes with his barrel or jug, and this one comes with his beam. Nishpara chado shelaze, bekorato shelaze. Broke the pitcher of this by the beam of this pator. So notice, just like in the first Mishnah, we have two different words referring to the same vessel, chavit and kad. But we're used to that already. So anyway, pator. Why pator? Shulaze reshut lahalech, ulaze reshut lahalech. To this one, there's permission to walk, and to this one, there's permission to walk. So the scenario is, two people walking, Rashut Rabim, and it says, this one's coming, that one's coming, they're coming from two different directions. One has a beam, one has a jug, and the beam breaks the jug, or say the jug gets broken by the beam. Halacha is patur, because they both had permission to do what they were doing. In a normal case, that's going to be the halacha. You can't blame one or the other. Fine. Then it says a second case. Haya bal hakora rishon uval hehavit aharon. Translation. Was the owner of the beam first? In English we'd say the owner of the beam was first. In Hebrew the word haya is at the beginning of the sentence. The owner of the beam was first, and the owner of the barrel was last, meaning behind him. That they were walking in a line.
Uh-huh.
Nishpara hechavit bakora. Broke the barrel by the beam. Patur bala kora. The owner of the kora, of the beam, is exempt. So this is the case of a rear-end collision. And in the rear-end collision, the second car got broken. Because the chavit, the barrel, is behind, and it rams into the beam. And the answer is, the halacha is, that the owner of the first car is exempt, because the second car hit him from behind and hurt itself. It's your fault for damaging your own car. I was just standing there doing the right thing. But I shouldn't say standing there, because then it goes on to say, Vim amad bala kora. But if stood, the owner of the beam hayav. So then we understand now that in the first case,
they were still walking.
They were both walking, and the second guy walked too fast and walked into the first guy.
Mm-hmm.
So the second guy got his barrel broken, but it's his problem because he shouldn't have walked so fast. In the second case, it's the same rear-end collision, except in the second case, the first car stopped. You don't stop in the middle of 635. And if someone rams into you from behind, it's not the fault of the guy who rammed into you from behind. It's your fault for stopping. So in that case, chayav. The first car is chayav.
Unless you say stop.
Right. V'mamar bala chavit. I'm sorry. V'mamar levala chavit amod. Pator. But if he said, in other words, if the stopped car said to the car behind him, Amod, in our language, if he put up a triangle, a flashing triangle, then Pator. So what did we have so far? We had first the case of two guys coming at each other. Patur. Then we had the case of Zeh Hazeh, one after the other, a rear end collision. In the rear end collision, if the first guy was moving and the second guy moved into him too fast, and the second guy got damaged, the second guy, tough luck. But if the first guy had stopped in the middle of the road, then the second guy does get his damage money from the first. But if the first guy, after having stopped, put up a warning sign, and the second guy nevertheless rammed into him and got damaged, then, patur, the first guy doesn't have to pay for the second guy's damage. And it's pretty simple.
Rabbi, but what's the chronology before he has to say Amod? Does he have to say that before he stops? Because what if he stops and he's about to say, but he doesn't get to?
Good point.
So perhaps he should say it before he stops.
Right, that's a good question. How much warning do you have to give? Mm-hmm. And what kind of stop are we talking about? Right, the Gemara is going to talk about that a little bit. Obviously,
because there's somebody in front of him with another cask.
or somebody in front of him has tripped and fallen.
Right, obviously, these rules are nice in theory, but applying them is not going to be so simple.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to ferret out the underlying principles and see how to apply them, but it's not going to be straightforward. And then it says, Haya val echavit rishon uval akor acharon. The owner of the barrel was first, the owner of the korah was second. So they're switched in the order that they're walking. It's now the beam that's behind the jug. Nishbara chavit b'korah, got broken the barrel by the beam. Chayav.
Who?
The owner of the beam. The owner of the beam rammed into the owner of the barrel.
So it's just like the one before, only reversed.
Okay. Right. So in this case, it's not that the guy who rammed in got damaged. The guy who rammed in did the damage. Okay. So he should have watched where he was going. Mm-hmm. And he's chayav for damaging the barrel in front of him, for ramming into the car in front of him and hurting him, hurting the car. Vim amad bala chavit, and if stood the owner of the chavit who's in front, and the beam behind him rammed into him because he did a sudden stop on 635, then patur, then the owner of the beam who rammed into the car in front of him and damaged it, owner of the beam is patur because the guy in front of him stopped suddenly without any warning. V'mamar l'val korah amod, but if the guy who stopped in front with his barrel said to the guy in back of him, stop, then chayav. But the guy in back rammed into him in any case, even though he saw the triangle flashing, then the guy rammed into the guy in front of him is chayav. V'chein ze ba b'niro v'ze b'pishtano. And similarly, if this one is coming with a flame, and this one with flax. Same rules apply. So, let's think about everything that's going on by going through the questions I asked.
Okay.
After the opening of the Mishnah, what key word is used to introduce the next main scenarios discussed here?
Im?
Say it again.
Im? What? I don't know.
You're very close, but not close enough.
Va'im?
You're very close, but not close enough. What is the first word?
Zeh.
Of the second and the third scenarios.
Okay.
Amar? Amud?
No?
I'm not understanding.
Haya?
Yes.
Haya. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's where you're talking about the scenarios.
As I just put on the board.
Okay.
How many scenarios are there? How many main scenarios are there in this Mishnah? There's three. Mm-hmm. The first one is three. This one's coming at that one. Mm-hmm. The second one is X behind Y.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third is Y behind X.
Right.
And the second and the third are both introduced by the word Haya. And now we're going to ask Mary Beth.
Mm-hmm.
How are the sub-scenarios introduced? With what one word?
Im.
Right.
Im.
And so then I'm going to put here the Im. Ve'im, and I'm going to put here ve'im, ve'im. Right, there's a second case, and mm-hmm. that's that the barrel is following the beam,
mm-hmm.
and that has a sub scenario. But if the beam stopped,
mm-hmm.
and this second sub scenario, if the beam that stopped said mm-hmm. amod,
right,
and the same thing in the third sub, in this third case. There are two sub-scenarios, the exact same sub-scenarios.
Right.
So it's really a very organized Mishnah. There are three main scenarios, mm-hmm. and then the second and the third cases have two sub-scenarios, respectively. So we...
Well, and then there's that... thing at the end about the
right.
light and the flax, and why did they put that in there?
Well, that they're telling us that the
exact same
halakha and two sub scenarios apply to a case in which you have people walking.
Mm-hmm.
One of them has a flame, and the other has
something
flax.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one in front of this one, or that one in front of this one, and it depends. Exactly as it says in the rest of the Mishnah.
Why didn't they say, okay, so then what if there's somebody who's carrying a heavy rock and somebody who's carrying a bale of hay? I mean, you know what?
Right.
Why
so
pick
what,
the fire?
What Mary Beth is saying
mm-hmm.
is what the Gemara would call a kushya of pshita. That's simple. Why did you say it? It's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That this applies in many other cases.
Mm-hmm.
Good question. The Gemara asked that question, indeed.
It's just a fire.
Is it because?
Well, I think it's because fire is dangerous
because it's
anyway.
Fire?
Yeah, because then fire is black.
And each one of the...
Yeah. Like a torch
avot.
Or a...
One of the avot.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. However,
mm-hmm.
it's true that Eish is one of the avot nesikin.
Mm-hmm.
But here we're going to have a funny case. Let me
because
give some background.
Because this wouldn't necessarily be a case of avot. This could still be a dam.
Could
still be a dam.
Very good. Now, that we've learned, for example, that regel, not everything done with regel is regel.
Mm-hmm.
And we've learned that not everything done with shein is Shane.
Mm-hmm.
They're names of categories.
Right.
The same thing is true with Eish. Not everything done with fire is fire.
Okay.
Because what the Torah says about fire, if you remember, mm-hmm. it says if you light a fire in your field and it spreads to someone else's field.
Uh-huh.
So fire, what the category, what the av of fire means, is when you do something in your property, but forces that are not directly in your control bring your damage to someone else's field. But in our case, if you're walking with fire behind someone who has flax and you walk into him with your fire, that's not fire.
Well, is this in here to make us realize that that is not a case of Eish, but a case of Adam?
That's a good possibility. I'm not sure why it's here, but that's a good possibility. Right, to point out that this is not Eish, this is actually Adam, but then you're assuming that the Mishnah is talking about Adam.
That's right.
And we have to discuss that.
It would always be, the fire person would always
or
be responsible.
Or are you back to Bor?
Yeah.
Right, perhaps actually the Mishnah is talking about Bor, which means that the fire is actually a Bor. Believe it.
The fire.
With the same laws as Bor, which means it's not responsible for... for kelim. We'll have to check if that's possible. Mm-hmm. But wait a second. The minute I said that, you should realize you should throw eggs at me. Or throw borot at me.
Okay.
Because what is the whole Mishnah talking about? It's talking about damage done to a chavit, to a barrel, and yeah. It's always chayav. Or it's chayav. When it's chayav, it's chayav. It never says that the person who did the damage is negligent, but he doesn't have to pay because bor doesn't have to pay for damaging kelim. It doesn't say that. It's talking about damaging kelim and paying, so it must be our whole Mishnah is not talking about bor. It's really talking about adama mazik.
Yeah.
And the conclusion just might be that the fire at the end of the Mishnah is really classified as adama mazik because it's in the man's hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not going by its own power. It's going by my power.
Mm-hmm.
It's really adama mazik. And we'd say
then
further...
Why aren't they responsible? Then why isn't that person responsible in every case?
What person?
The person with the fire.
Right, Adama Mazik is responsible in every case, except if someone else is responsible.
He's responsible. He's not responsible if he stops and says halt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then mm-hmm. the person behind him
is responsible.
Him, he's responsible.
Or if he's behind.
If he's behind and he plows into somebody, he's responsible.
Unless they stop.
Unless that person in front says stop.
Right, right, Tom. We have to realize the improbability of the challenge you presented. Because if I walk up to you and punch you in the face
mm-hmm.
and break my nail, I can't say, you can't say to me, Adam Mazik is always responsible. So, I mean, I can't say that Adam Mazik is always responsible. You're responsible for breaking my nail. Right? Adam Mazik is responsible when someone else is not culpable.
Right.
But if I cause the damage, if I am the negligent one, then I can't be classified as a Dama Mazik for breaking my fingernail.
That's right.
And that's what this whole Mishnah is about. The whole Mishnah is apparently about a Dama Mazik. The fact that the Mazik was carrying a beam and the beam caused the damage doesn't make it less Adam HaMazik. That beam is a extension
of the person.
Of the Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing might very well be with the fire at the end here. Now, let's just point out that if this Mishnah is talking about Adam HaMazik, and it is, that doesn't necessarily mean that the previous Mishnah is talking about Adam HaMazik with the Shnei Kadarim, the two potters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how could we make a distinction? How could we say that our Mishnah is talking about Adam HaMazik, but the previous one is talking about bor. In both cases, it's a man that did the damage. You might even say the previous Mishnah is more likely to be Adam HaMazik, because it Adam damaged directly, whereas in our Mishnah, the Adam damaged through his extension that was in his hand, his beam. But I'm claiming that even though in our Mishnah, the beam does the damage, it's called Adam HaMazik, whereas in the previous Mishnah, even though the man did the damage, it could not be Adam HaMazik. It might not be. It might actually be bor. Why? Why am I saying this?
Well, because in Mishnah 4, it talks about stumbling.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really, it sounds like it, that you go out of control.
Good. Good.
Yep.
And right.
The first Adam has lost control.
Right.
Yeah.
So he loses his status as Adam because he becomes a passive object on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in our Mishnah, the guy in front might have stopped, but he's standing on his own two feet. He's mm-hmm. within his own power. Mm-hmm. So he remains Adam HaMazik, even though he doesn't damage with his fist, but with the Korah that's in his hand, or with the fire that's in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on to some more questions. Question six. May the cases of Amod and Amar be subcategories of more than the main scenarios in which they are mentioned.
Hmm. Like what? Standing and speaking? Well, you mean parallel examples like the fire and the flax? Or are you talking about other Mishnas?
I'm not talking about other Mishnayot.
Well, I think that every one of them, that every single example you would come up with like this would have the same thing. If you
okay,
stop,
so
you're liable. But if you speak, you stop and speak, you're not liable if you give a warning.
Right, right. And all I had in the mind is look at the space I left over here.
Yeah.
Is this the first time we've had where something spoken has legal consequences?
It could be. I don't think we've discussed warnings before.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
We've had actions before.
Well, the people that would tell the person, your wall fell down.
But that wasn't mentioned in the Mishnah.
Yeah. Here it actually has a quotation. Yeah.
It says exactly what to say.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a little formula.
Which is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in English law, there are a lot of things that can be said that have legal consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But here, this is the first time I can think of that we did.
Yeah, I think that you're right.
Yeah.
Well, let's some of the little side issues.
In that first case, before we get to the Hayah, we don't have any indication of stopping and standing. We don't have any indication of Ahmad.
No. Just as one came along, or
they were probably passing along, and the plank was out too far and hit. So everything is still in motion. Whereas in the two Hayah cases, we have one of them stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And we either have silence on the part of the one who stops, or we have a specific warning issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If the one Ahmads, then he has to Amar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If he wants to be careful.
So in the case of rear end collisions, like we have in the second case and the third, in the case of rear end collisions, it's more likely to come up with this sub-scenario of Ahmad. When you have a rear end collision, sometimes it's because the guy behind is going too fast, and
it's
sometimes because the guy in front stops suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the case of two people coming at each other, usually it's not because one of them stopped, it's because neither are looking where they're going.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it is possible. It is possible. It's not as prevalent, but it's possible in the case of Zeba and Zeba, it is possible that one of them stopped in Reshut Rabim where he shouldn't have. And if that is what caused the accident, then I'd probably say it's the same halakha, that if Ahmad, then the person who Ahmad is Hayav if he caused damage to someone else. But if he said
Ahmad,
then he probably becomes exempt. That's just my point, that these two scenarios, although they're not mentioned in the first main scenario and are less prevalent there, but if they did occur there, then it probably would have the same halakha. And that's indeed what the commentators say.
What I understand this thing to be saying is that if you stop in such a way that could cause injury or damage, it's to somebody else or something else, it's your obligation to get their attention by issuing a warning.
Yeah. And it really is very similar.
Regardless of what directions you're coming from.
You know, in Israel, apparently it's not so in America, but in Israel, when you go for your yearly car inspection,
mm-hmm.
you have to show the inspector that you have an orange triangle in the car.
Ooh.
Oh, interesting.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to think, perhaps that's only when I had a vehicle classified as a commercial vehicle. But at least then...
Well, but even here, a commercial vehicle, I doubt, has to do that.
And I don't know exactly what American law is or Israeli law, but it looks like there's an assumption that when you stop in the middle of the road, mm-hmm. you're supposed to put out a triangle.
Yeah.
And I assume, just like it says here, if you did, and someone else nevertheless rams into you, it's his problem. But if you didn't,
mm-hmm.
then you're responsible. Right. That's what this Mishnah says, and it makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. So now, let's compare our Mishnah to the previous Mishnah. This is question 8. Which main scenario and sub-scenario is similar to the one in the previous Mishnah? First, which main scenario, A, B, or C?
Well, we've got to have a B or C because one's walking.
Yeah.
Whichever one.
Right. The previous Mishnah is Zeh Achar Zeh.
Yeah, that's right. It's uh-huh. the case when one's behind the other.
So it's
or following
B or C.
Right.
It's the two Hayah cases.
Right. Yes.
Okay. And then what about the sub scenarios that we have in B and C? Which sub scenario would apply there? Is it that they're both walking and the second one's walking too fast, or is it that the
first one stops?
Right, so one of them stops because he fell.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore we know it's a case of if he stopped,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't warn. Doesn't say that he warned.
Right.
He didn't warn. So now is it B or C? In other words, who is the one that stopped? Is the one that did the damaging or received the damaging?
When it did the damage.
Right? Yeah. Which means that Mishnah Dalet, the fourth Mishnah, is similar to the case in which the owner of the beam is walking first, and he stops,
right. Broken by the plane.
And the owner of the barrel or the pitcher is behind him and trips over him. And it says in Mishnah Dalet that the guy who fell on the ground is Chayav. And it says in Mishnah Hey that the beam guy who stopped is Chayav. So it's parallel, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It makes sense. Okay, fine. But then... but how is it different? It's very similar. Oh. Mishnah Hay is similar to Dalet, but how is it different?
Because the one in front, the one that did the damage, is under control.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So we learned that in Mishnah Dalet, the one who's in front and causes damage is not in control, and he's Chayav.
Mm-hmm.
Now in Mishnah we learn, and all the more so, if he is in control,
mm-hmm.
that he's Chayav. Mm-hmm. So really, the previous Mishnah is the bigger Chidush, is the bigger innovation. Even though the guy who's on the ground, who stopped, is not in control, he's still Chayav. Ah, but why is he Chayav? What do we have to say?
He didn't warn.
Right, we have to say that he is in control. That he wasn't in control when he got there, he tripped.
Mm-hmm.
But the only explanation, unless we like Mary Beth did, that he's responsible for tripping, we don't hold like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's responsible either because he could have gotten up and he didn't, or because he could have warned and he didn't.
But we do that from inference, whereas the others, it's specific.
Yeah, it says it, you mean, it says
right.
It says it.
It's explicit,
it's
yeah.
Explicit.
Yeah. Let's see what else I wanted to ask here.
So in Mishnah 4,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't say it, but by inference, if he called out,
I'm falling, I'm falling,
I'm
having a seizure.
You know, I'm
right.
And then would he be patur?
Looks like that. It looks like that, right? Certainly makes sense. Certainly makes sense, as far as the principle goes.
You know, if the guy in back of him keeps coming.
Well, it just seems like a very unfortunate thing, because the person falls, so he's presumably maybe injured, and then the person behind him also gets injured, so that's his fault, so he just had a really bad day.
You're right.
But you know what? I assume that these type of cases fill up the courts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right?
Yeah. I'm sure. These are the kind that would definitely fill up the courts.
So now, let's go to question 11. According to this Mishnah, is one permitted to temporarily stop and rest in Rashut Rabim?
If you speak up and say so.
Yeah,
if you speak up and say so.
Or you somehow have to get out of the path where nobody could run into you or trip on you. Or,
but you could
well,
just stop and say.
One of the things some people do in the Rashut Rabim is they stop and talk.
Say it again, please.
People you're walking and you see somebody you know and you stop and talk. You don't
right.
expect people to run into you.
Right. Okay. But the Mishnah says, if you stop and talk, I think it says,
well,
unless your talk is amod, that it looks like if someone runs into
well,
you.
But, I mean, it's amod if it's a sudden stop. You know, like if you're, so that people following you. But if you're just stopped there,
well, don't stop in the middle of the street and talk to your friend. Step yeah. off to the side.
Right.
Believe me, people are going to tell you that.
Yeah. Get out of yeah. the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're standing right in the middle where everybody's carrying their you know their
pots,
slacks and fire might be dangerous to you anyway.
Yeah. But don't stop and talk mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah. It's like people who stop in the hallway and to talk to somebody and nobody can get past.
Mm-hmm.
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 You want to go, bang!
And they have the Havdalah candle in their hand. hand. So, let's just point out that Jeremy mentioned something now that relates to Mishnah Yot Usor in the past. He said, you should get off to the side. So we've learned well, there is such a thing. It's Sidei Rashut Rabim. There's
yeah.
such a thing, right? It has a separate status.
Right.
Mm.
So it could be not allowed to stop and talk in Rashut Rabim. You have to go off to the side of the street. Another point I want to make is, it kind of came up in what Tom was saying, it might depend how long you stop for. There might be different types
right.
of stops.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say in our Mishnah. It seems to talk about any stop could already be in trouble. But we'll see in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about different time frames of stopping.
Well, what if somebody were to stop just long enough to perhaps shift the weight on his
How did you know? That's exactly what the Gemara says. Exactly.
It's okay to
well,
do
that. It's
a
logical thing to do. Is you know, he's got to readjust his packages.
Mm-hmm. That's
before
exactly
he drops
what the Gemara
it.
Talks about.
And so then he doesn't have to announce?
Right. Because there are certain
so
things
short.
That it's expected you're going to do in Rashut Rabim. But let's wait for the Gemara. Before the Gemara, I have two questions here. Let's see if we want to do them right now. Right, Mishnah 12. Let's use that. How might we use the answer to the previous question concerning the conditions under which you can and cannot stop to go back to the beginning of the first Mishnah of the chapter and clarify the very first law that we found there? Very first law of this chapter.
Of this chapter. Which is chapter 3.
Uh-huh. Chapter 3.
If one leave a jar in the public domain.
And if somebody comes along.
Somebody comes over. Along, stumbles over it and breaks it.
Their patur. Bim huzak ba. Balachavit haya benisko. So I put my jug in Rashut Rabim. And someone else came and tripped over it and got hurt by it, I'm chayav. So I put my jug, I shouldn't have left it there.
But if, what are you saying? If you stand there and say, I'm putting my jug.
Very good. Very good.
I'm stopping very here good. With my jug.
Right?
Yeah.
We probably should learn that if you, exactly that, if you stood there and said stop.
Like those people that are so helpful when somebody stops their car and they stand back behind and go.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly. And furthermore, if we're going to talk about our Mishnah, about the time frame, how long of stoppage is considered stoppage to make you hayav for being there and causing damage, then the same thing in Mishnah Aleph.
Mm-hmm.
If we'll say in our Mishnah, let's say that you're allowed to stand there for 5 seconds to adjust the weight, then you might be allowed in Mishnah Aleph to leave your chavit there for 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to shed light on this.
What it also says that, in general, you need to not only look where you're going, but you need to not be following so closely on the heels of somebody that if they either stop for a permissible short length of time or they say a mode that you can't,
right,
you can't get out of the way or keep from getting hurt.
Absolutely. And it all makes perfect sense.
But this is about being so close to somebody that you would break something. You know, it doesn't say keep a distance of 7 car lengths between you and the previous car. It assumes that everybody is so close,
right,
that you are connected to the
other
person. But
our laws deal with what happens when you run into somebody. There's nothing in the law that says stay X many car lengths. That's an inference we have drawn in order to avoid having the problem.
Those things, yes.
Yeah. And if it says that saying a mode exempts you,
yes,
well, that assumes that there is some time for the person who's coming at you to stop
to
if
react.
You say a mode. Otherwise, yeah, saying a mode wouldn't help. So it assumes he was supposed to keep enough distance to be able to stop when you say.
Well, I tell you, I am thinking of bicycling. And when you ride a bicycle with other people, you are supposed to be very, very close to them because you go faster that way, and everybody understands that. And it's exactly like this. If you see the person in front is very responsible to say, there's something coming up,
right,
I'm stopping, they are...
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
And if they stop...
Absolutely, because
the person behind them does wreck.
Yeah, because you're supposed to stay very close.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's supposed to be dangerous, in other words.
It is dangerous to ride a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's part of the fun.
My helmet knows. My helmet saved my life once.
Wow, that's very good. That's very good.
That is good.
I heard it hit the ground so hard, and I knew that if I had not had on, I would.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Death by fractured skull.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now we're looking at the Talmud Bavli, Babylonian Talmud, in Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. This is a short sugya, short passage. The language is not difficult, but the ideas are quite complicated, and I divided, as you can see, into 4 sections to make it clearer how it works. It took me quite a while, actually, to figure it out. It's not an easy sugya. So there are 4 different levels of the discussion. It begins like this. Tanan, it brings our Mishnah. Haya Baal HaKorah Rishon Uval HaChavit Acharon. The owner of the beam was first, and the owner of the barrel was behind him. Nishpara HaChavit BaKorah, and broke the barrel by the beam, Pator. We said, why did we say Pator? Because the guy behind with the barrel apparently went too fast and rammed into the beam in front of him. The beam is Pator. V'mamad balach korah hayav. But if the owner of the beam stopped, and then the guy in back just rammed into him because the car in front of him was stopped, then the car in front of him is chayav. So says the Gemara concerning our Mishnah, my lav, what is it not? In other words, isn't it the following that I'm about to tell you? What not? Isn't it? Sha'amad lichateif. Isn't it that he stopped to shoulder, which is exactly what Jan said earlier? Kateif means shoulder. Lichateif means to arrange the load on your shoulder, which is a short stop. And not only is it short, but the guy behind you can see that you're stopping for that purpose. He sees you adjusting the refrigerator on your back. And it's a short stop. And if you had kept your distance behind, by the time you got up to him, he would have already been on his way. So says the Gemara, isn't this halacha that says that if the first guy stopped, he's chayav? Isn't that in all cases, even if the first guy stopped only lichateif? De orchehu. Orche means it's the way. Like language of orach. Like orachayim means the way of life. De orchehu. That he stopped to do what people normally do, which is readjust the load. It only takes a few seconds. V'katani chayav. And it teaches chayav. Katani, right? It learns in the Mishnah chayav. Dahava le lahazir. Because it was upon him lahazir.
To warn.
Mm-hmm. To warn. In other words, the Gemara's first reaction is that since the Mishnah doesn't say what type of stop it was, it must be all types of stopping. Even a very, very normal, temporary stop to adjust the refrigerator on your back. That even in that case, if you stopped your hayav when the guy behind you rammed into you, and all the more so are you hayav if you stop for a longer stop. That's the Gemara's first reading. Says the next line, lo, sha'amad lafush. No, that he stopped to rest. Lafush, think of the nun as having fallen out. So the word is linafesh. Like in the beginning of Bereshit. Shabbat vayinafesh. Language of nefesh. Stop for a breather. That's lafush. So the Gemara says, wait a second. You can't prove to me from the Mishnah that any kind of stop is a stop that makes you responsible. It might be that you're responsible only if you stopped lafush, which means that if you stopped lekatef, you're not chayav, because that's orche. That's the normal way that everyone does. And the guy behind you should have left enough room between you so that if you stopped lekatef and then went on, he wouldn't have rammed into you. So here's an alternative way of reading the Mishnah, a way that gives more leeway to the first guy. He was allowed to stop and not be responsible for stopping, even if the guy behind him rammed into him, as long as the stopping was only lekatef. But if it was lafush, that's what the Mishnah says, that stoppage makes you chayav if someone behind you gets damaged by ramming into you. That's clear. Two ways of reading the Mishnah. And then the Gemara has a third level in which the first speaker is coming back and responding. Okay? The first speaker is coming back and responding. And he says, Avalamad lekatef mai pator? Which means, but if he stopped lekatef, what? Pator, are you telling me that in your reading, that if the first guy stopped only lekatef, only to adjust the load, that he's patur, that's the way you want to read the Mishnah? That the first guy is patur if he stops lekatef, when it said chayav, it only meant if he stopped to rest? Is that what you mean? I'll prove to you that you're wrong. Can't be. Because of the following reading. But before I read it, I'm going to stop and tell you the Talmudic principle that's discussed in this third section we're about to read. The Talmudic principle is in these three words at the end of the line we're about to read. Liflog v'litnei bidida. And I remember, I think I've told you guys that the first Gemara I ever learned was Baba Kama, and the chapter was the third chapter. this chapter. Mm-hmm. We've spent the whole 7 months of the winter on this chapter, in the Gemara. And I remember when my Rebbe explained this expression we're about to explain right now. Mm-hmm. So, liflog v'litnei bidida. Let's explain those three words. Did you ever do this expression in Gemara?
It sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
You're not sure. So the first word is liflog, which is an infinitive. And the root you can see is pei lamed gimel. The same root that in modern Hebrew is the foundation for the word miflaga.
Miflaga.
A political party. Or a peleg, which means a part.
Part.
So liflog means to divide up. To make parts. To make parties, to make divisions. Liflog, v'litnei, litnei is also an infinitive, and the root is taf nun yud, or taf nun hey, taf nun aleph. That's the same root that makes up the word mishnah. In Aramaic, right, in Hebrew, the taf and the shin interchange. Litnei is lishanot, to learn, to teach. Bidida, the third word, means in itself, in her, literally. The hey at the end is a feminine, third person feminine, singular. So it means to divide up and teach it in itself. To divide up and teach it in itself, or to say it more clearly, to differentiate and teach it within itself. So that's what it means literally, to mm-hmm. differentiate and teach it within itself. It's a Talmudic principle which means the following, that if we have a law in a Mishnah or in a Braita, and you propose to me that when it says Chayav, it's only in a certain case, but in a different case, it's different, it's patur. Then I can come back to you and say that if you say in a different case it's patur, then that means that there's no internal distinction that's more within the case of chayav that would have it being patur. That didn't come out clear at all. It didn't come out clear at all.
No.
Oh boy, how are we going to say this? Okay, so let's see. Chayav Patur.
Mm-hmm.
If you have this case X, A, which is Chayav, mm-hmm. and this case B, which is Patur.
Yeah.
And you come to me and say, you know what? There's a subcase within A that's patur.
Uh-huh.
I'll say to you, liflog v'litnei bidida. In other words, if the source felt that there's a distinction within A that is patur, it wouldn't have searched for patur in B. It would have told me within the A. In other words, right. If there is an exception, and it gives an exception in a different case, uh-huh. that means there's probably not an exception in the first case. Because if there was, why would it have run out to B to say, but there would have shown me in A itself, there's uh-huh. an exception.
So they should have split up A, and
right.
then that
that's
would
the meaning
mean
of liflog v'litna bidida. If you claim to me there's a distinction in A, mm-hmm. then why did it run to B to tell me a distinction? Let it liflog, let it make the distinction, liflog, blitnan, teach it in A itself. If it only taught it in B, then it probably doesn't exist in A.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the principle means.
Well, that's very clean. It means that you would never forget anything, you know. You would not have any add-ons or anything. You would just be saying, absolutely, this is all here.
Right. It assumes a very organized thought structure.
Because there's a B.
Because there's a B.
Because there's a B.
It means if the author
then
gave you the patur in B, it probably doesn't exist in A.
Right. Because otherwise, why give you B?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And didn't we have some earlier where we said, well, you know, we're not sure why they put that little Mishnah in there? And
you're right that there's many cases in which you would think you could apply this a principle, and the Gemara didn't apply it. I make no claims of consistency. But the Gemara applies it here. So let's summarize where we were. We brought our Mishnah, and the first opinion said that the stoppage that causes the first car to be responsible for the damage to the car behind it is any type of stoppage, even lekatef. Then the second opinion said, no, it's not any type of stoppage, it's just lafush. It's a long stoppage, and if there was a short stoppage, it would be patur. And then the third section is the first party come back and saying, are you telling me that if it was a short stoppage, it would be patur? That can't be. Why? Liflog velitna bidida. I'm going to say it outside before I read. The Mishnah says that if the guy who stopped yelled, here I am, be careful, that makes him patur. But why did you run to B to tell me patur? Why didn't you tell me within A patur? Why didn't you say that the stoppage that makes him chayav is only lafush? But if it's lekatef, patur. You didn't say that. You ran to B to give me patur. That proves there is no patur in A. Which actually makes a lot of sense logically, right? Mm-hmm. Why did the Mishnah run to say that the way to make yourself patur is to yell stop? Why didn't it say the way to make yourself patur is just to have a different type of stoppage? It really is very, very logical. So let's see it inside. So it says, the beginning of the line, Avala mad lekatef, my patur, what are you telling me? That if he stopped only lekatef, what is it? It's patur? No, it can't be. Aditani Seifa, which means until you taught me the end that says Vimamar lo bala chavit amod pator, if said to him to the owner of the barrel, stop, then he's pator. Liflog litna bidida, it should have divided it and taught it within itself, within the types of stoppages. It should have said that he's patur, not when he yells stop, but it should have said he's patur when he makes a shorter stop. It should have said, last word of the line, b'medvrim amarim, in what are these words spoken, k'she'amad lefush, when he stopped to rest. When is he chayav? When he stopped lefush. Aval amad lekatef patur, but if he stopped only lekatef, patur, since it didn't say that, then it's probably not true. And the conclusion would be at this point that you're responsible for all stoppage, since it didn't make a distinction in stoppagings, then there probably is no distinction. And therefore, at this point, we're saying that you're responsible for all stopping. Even the shortest stop in the world makes you liable for the damage caused to the car that ran into you from behind.
So, is that the law here?
We're not finished yet.
There's
one more line.
Okay.
How are we going to get out of this? How is the opinion that says there is a distinction between type of stoppages, how is he going to deal with this objection of liflog velitne bedida by giving a reason why it could be that even though there is a distinction in types of stopping, give a reason why the Mishnah didn't say it. A logical reason. So he says the following. He says, ha, kamashmalan. Behold, it came to teach us. There was a reason why it didn't say what you said it should have said if it's really true. Ha, kamashmalan. Behold, it's coming to teach us. It's coming to let us hear. Mashma, let us hear. Da'af al gav. Damad lefush, that even though he stopped to rest, ki kamalo levala chavit, when he said to the owner of the barrel, amod, patur. In other words, this opinion is claiming that if he only stopped lekatef, he's really patur. But it also has to explain why the Mishnah didn't say that. Why did the Mishnah didn't say it? Because the Mishnah had a greater chidush to let you hear. a greater point. And the point is that even if you stop for a long time, lefush, which is very negligent, if you said stop, it exempts you. Mm-hmm. Had the Mishnah only said that you're patur if you stop for less amount of time, you would have thought that if you stop for more amount of time, that saying stop wouldn't exempt you.
Wouldn't exempt you.
To teach you that you're exempt if you speak up, even if you talk for a long amount of time, even if you stop for a long amount of time, it says that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still true that had you stopped for a short amount of time, you're also exempt. But since that's a lesser chidush, it chooses not to say it, but to say the greater chidush. And the greater chidush is that even though you did an act of negligence by stopping for very long, you can obviate your responsibility by saying, stop, here I am, don't run into me.
So did you just say that the short stop, just to straighten your shoulders, you're not liable?
Responsible. But the conclusion at this point is that there are two ways to relieve yourself of responsibility, either by stopping only lekatef, or by yelling, here I am, even if you stopped lefush. That's the conclusion of the Gemara. And that conclusion means you're allowed to stop in the hallway for a few seconds.
That's right.
But only a few seconds.
And if you have the Abdallah candles with you, be careful.
Right. Because why you're allowed to stop for a few seconds? Because that's Orchei, that's the way that, that's what Rishut Rabim is for carrying refrigerators, that's what people do in Rishut Rabim.
That seems like a
and
very
so
slippery
it says,
slope to me.
It says it says indirectly. So if you're in Rishut Rabim, you better pay attention to where you're going.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be thinking, you have to be mindful of everybody around you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mishnah certainly teaches you how to be a better driver.
Yeah.
And a better pedestrian.
You know,
keeps you aware of responsibility.
And speak up.
Whenever you ask what the law is here, you know, the trouble is here we've got 50 laws.
Well, what's that thing? If you hit somebody from the rear, if you hit the rear of their car, you're at fault.
You're
is that
fault.
Right?
That's the assumption.
So right. I hit the rear of somebody's car with the rear of my car, but I'm still at fault.
You mean you back up into them?
Yeah.
So we won't get to Mishnah 6 today. Looks like we'll get to that next time. So next week we have a class during Learning Fest. Everyone knows about Learning Fest?
Learning Fest.
Mm-hmm. Know about Learning Fest? I forgot to put my thing on the table. Here it is.
Brochure.
Here it is.
Yes.
Okay.